I want to thank you for yours, Michelle, for the news.
Yep, yep.
For Devin, for all the work you do. Thank you, Bobby Longstroke. Tune into the family meeting every Sunday at 4. I'm your host, Eric Grant. Peace.
NBC News Radio, I'm Chris Caraggio.
The latest round of talks aimed at a ceasefire in Gaza stalled today. Correspondent Megan Fitzgerald has more on developments in Cairo.
We heard from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today doubling down, essentially saying that ending this war is off the table. And we also know that he said that deal or no deal, that planned ground incursion into Rafah will be happening.
Both Israel and Hamas trade blame over the impasse, which came despite word that negotiators were close to a breakthrough. CIA Director Bill Burns is reportedly traveling to Qatar as the U.S. continues to push for progress. Negotiators were said to have been working on a new framework involving the release of hostages kidnapped from Israel in exchange for a pause in the fighting. UCLA is resuming regular operations starting tomorrow. The university announced today faculty and staff will be able to resume in-person classes, but did leave the option to conduct them online until May 10th. Officials also said the law school would still hold exams as regularly scheduled. The announcement recommended people avoid Arroyo Quad, given the cleanup efforts that are underway there. The university will maintain a police presence on campus. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem continues to face criticism over details in her upcoming memoir. Appearing on CBS's Face the Nation, Noem faced a grilling over controversial claims that include having met North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
As soon as it was brought to my attention, we went forward and have made some edits. So I'm glad that this book is being released in a couple of days and that those edits will be in place and that people will have the updated version.
The Republican governor refused to say directly whether she met with the dictator. She also defended a passage in the book where she details how she shot and killed her dog, calling it a dangerous animal that was killing livestock. Noem was considered to be on Donald Trump's shortlist for vice president.
I'm Chris Caraggio, NBC News Radio.
WCPT Willow Springs is powered by the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program, partnering with your business to save money and energy.
Tired of all those talking heads down the dial who think they're always right?
People need to just calm down. It's gotten ridiculous.
Welcome to WCPT 820, where facts matter.
Quite frankly, I get most of my news from you.
This is WCPT 820, Chicago's progressive talk. The Big Picture with Edwin Eisenkranz, Saturdays at 1 p.m.
We don't know what the Biden administration has done. You ask Americans about the economy, they're clueless. You ask them what they've done foreign policy, they're clueless. Why don't Americans know what the president is doing? And I'm thinking, has there ever been a presidency in American history where the guy who used to be in office gets more coverage than the guy who is in office?
The Big Picture with Edwin Eisenkranz, Saturdays at 1 p.m.
As a professional musician, Lachi stays true to her creative vision, even with continuing vision loss. But she's not alone. For 50 years, the Foundation Fighting Blindness has funded research into treatments and cures for blinding retinal diseases, providing hope to people with vision loss. And for Lachi, winning means using her voice to bring hope to others with vision loss. The Foundation Fighting Blindness. Together, we're winning. Help us end blinding diseases at fightingblindness.org.
I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
The following program, Kitchen Table Progressives, is sponsored by the Kitchen Table Progressives and, to the extent applicable, their guests. The views and opinions expressed therein do not necessarily reflect those of Heartland Signal, LLC, or its management.
Welcome to Kitchen Table Progressive. Paul Richardson here, inviting you to join us around the table for an hour of casual conversation on law, civics, and politics, driving the current issues. Where are the menu is progressive, and the table manners are unapologetically liberal. Gosh, what does that mean, liberal? That means we're not ashamed to be fair. That's what that means. Doesn't mean libertine, doesn't mean anything goes. It means we're not ashamed to be fair. Okay. Well, and by the way, let's look at some of the things that happened this week. Doesn't this seem like an odd election year? Where, I mean, we're not ramping up with the issues, with the issues and interests like normal, health care, Medicare. This is just kind of stale and stagnant, going nowhere. You know, we're not hearing the regular stuff that precede an election. We have Trump on trial, and Hope Hicks melts down on the witness stand, tears up that she didn't know that, now she's 35 now, but 4 years ago and before that, when she was under 30, didn't know that Donald Trump is the creep that he is. But now she realizes it. Good thing that she let the jury know that. So then the other thing that's just bugging me, that I heard on, it was a podcast yesterday. The name slips my mind. Rudy Giuliani is trying to file for bankruptcy to get out of paying the $150 million in defamation that he was ordered to pay in the Georgia defamation case of Shane Moss and Rudy Freeman, that he defamed the election workers. Remember down in Georgia? He's told the court that he's living on within his means, which is $43,000 a month. He's living within his means. And therefore, he's doing the best he can, but he just can't afford to pay him anything. At $43,000 a month, okay? So that's about 12 times more than most of y'all make, right? 12 times. So if you make $43,000 a year, Rudy Giuliani, he's just living within his means at $43,000 a month, and he can't afford to pay anything. I mean, why are the courts not liquidating all of his assets immediately and paying these people what they are owed? Right. Like I said, liberal means not ashamed to be fair. He tried to destroy and has, to a large degree, destroyed the lives of these two women, Shane Moss and Ruby Freeman. But, they're black women. It's okay to destroy lives of black women, tell lies about them, have people threatening them. But if you're living on $43,000 a month, you're doing the best you can, even though you got a judgment against you for $150 million and people lined up behind them. There's another plaintiff has a $3.5 million defamation suit, and of course the Dominion voting machines, they're going to be on him for a ton more. He's facing charges in Michigan, other states. What a complete loser that guy is! He's a loser. He's got, according to what was the podcast? I can't remember. He's got three World Series rings, because he was the mayor when the Yankees won three World Series. Those could be sold. I'll tell you, that's a start. What do those go for? About 20,000, about 20 grand, 20, maybe 25,000. Since they were his, they might sell for 25,000. And those plaintiffs can start with that. I mean, I could dig a 25,000 to start, right? You owe me 150 million. I'll take 25 grand to start, because you destroyed my life. Because I'm a worthless black person. I'm a worthless black woman, right? So you could just tell lies about me and have people threaten me. Part of this was one of these people that threatened these women, I think it was Ruby Freeman, they went to the police station, and the police were like, okay, you want to say what you want to say here? Why didn't the police arrest these people? It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. It makes me sick. And it tells you here, The Trump administration and all of his cohorts, his cabal of criminals, have proven to us that justice in America is a double standard. It's a double standard for the rich who can't live on $43,000. It's just, I'm doing the best I can. It's all I can do. Right? It's all I can do. what's 43,000 about $550,000 a year is what he's down to. He's living within his means on $550,000 a year. Oh, unbelievable, unbelievable! And the courts are just delaying. You know, they're deciding whether to hear his bankruptcy. No, bankruptcy, you cannot dismiss a defamation or court ruling on bankruptcy. It's not, you can't do it. You can't even dismiss your stinking student loan with bankruptcy. No, Congress said you can't do that. If you're a college student and you're swimming in debt because of not how much your tuition costs were, it's the fees and penalties that have amounted if you had trouble paying it back. The fees and penalties on your loan is what caused these loans to be so high, the balances to be so high. And President Biden was just going to get rid of those and make us pay for them? No, we're not paying for them. The United States government is charging outrage. They're being an outrageous lender. Actually, they aren't. It's the banks that they farm these, loans out to. Those are the creeps. Again, the super rich, the bankers, the banksters, as I hear tell they're called. The banksters, the gangsters, get it? Yeah, okay. Well, let's get on to the topic of the week, because I know
our justice system is blank.
The family meeting was discussing Gaza, and so if those of you who still want to talk about that, or you want to talk about it some more, and you were able to get on the family meeting, and you want to talk about some more of it, we'll talk about that. I haven't talked about this topic before because, it isn't that complicated, but you get into a lot of, I'll call it issue instead of interest-based conversation. Now, let me explain what that is. Issues are the things that we debate and argue about that don't necessarily affect us personally. We don't have an interest is something that does affect you personally. It affects you monetarily, financially. It could affect your rights. Abortion is an interest. It's not an issue. We have been treating abortion like an issue in this country for damn too long that it's an issue. Oh, it's a matter of opinion. No, abortion is an interest. Reproductive health care is an interest. And frankly, we have not been insisting that it be referred to as health care. That's where we went wrong. And that's kind of how the court got to where they did, is by not insisting that we have not insisted that, no, it's reproductive health care is part of health care. That's an interest. It's being taken away. It affects people's lives because not only does it affect you financially, it affects your body. It affects you biologically and economically. When a so-called person, I mean, the right wing wants to call a fetus a person, when they are being given person status, so they're, I guess, let me refer to it this way. A fetus is an unborn and undocumented person who has more due process rights than a woman who happens to be pregnant with that occupier, that occupier of her body. Yeah. I know that's harsh, but let's just call it what it is. That's what it is. They want to talk harsh. They call us murderers. And see, we're the liberals who are libertine. Anything goes. You just have sex and then you kill a baby. Yeah. That's what we've been cast as. And so much is the same thing going on with the discussion arguments about Gaza. The protests, what are the interests of the protesters? These are college students. I'm wrestling with this idea. College students and others. Now, I might say some things about the others, the provocateurs. It might upset some people, but I'm going to make some observations. Okay, and I'm not making value judgments about this. I'm just making observations. Of course, they come across like value judgments. But what's the difference between the protests about the war in Gaza, and why isn't there a protest about the war in Ukraine? People are trying to stop funding that. We're not protesting. We don't see protests about the war in Ukraine. Russia, get out. Stop the war. Or maybe we're helping Ukraine. Some people see that differently. But it's a war. But the difference between the two is much different than the protests in 1969 and 1970. Kent State was the anniversary. Well, 54th anniversary was yesterday. I can remember, because I was the one who got up early in my house, and I used to go get the newspaper, the Detroit Free Press, out of, you know, it was put in the front door. And I was the first one to see those headlines. I was also the first one in 1969 to see the headlines of the Paint Bianca murders in August 69. And I thought that was freaky. I just thought the world was crazy. But the world isn't less crazy now. It's still crazy. The difference is about the protesters on campuses now is that with respect to Gaza, we're not losing 200 soldiers a week like we were in 1969 and 1970 after the Tet Offensive, after the Vietnamese launched the Tet Offensive. That's when we started losing the war. And we were getting our butts kicked. We really were. We got our butts kicked all the way up through 73. That's when we started to pull out after trying to expand the war and losing even more. Okay, so in terms of our interest, no. We're not losing young people. That's one difference. The other difference is we have a similar thing in terms of how we treat native indigenous people here in this country. They have no rights. They have their citizens, but and they can vote, but they don't have their own lands. Did you know that the reservations are, they don't own their own land. In other words, if the indigenous natives of this land wanted to say, you know what, this whole reservation thing just, it stinks. It's just not great. Let's just sell it all and integrate, fully integrate into the white American culture. They couldn't, because guess what? They don't own their reservations. The United States government does. Because the official policy of the United States government, as per Johnson v. McIntosh in 1823, is that the native peoples of this country do not and never did own any land here. In the place where they're from, right? They didn't own any land. You know why? Because they don't have a doctrine of land ownership. That's why. And when we came, when we came from England and then became colonists here, we had a doctrine of ownership because that's what Europeans had. And then we had this war with England, and we had a treaty with England. England were the first occupiers. They were English colonies. We came to the white people, the whatever, came to the English colonies, had a war with them, and in the treaty that says now the land belongs to us, and with the conditions that they're occupied by natives, but those natives don't own anything. Okay, so what about Gaza? Why is Gaza where it is? Why do the Palestinians live where they live? Okay, in 1948, Israel was recreated with its traditional boundaries. The traditional ancient boundaries from what it was in the year 70. Right, that was like 40 years after Jesus was crucified. In the year 70, in the Roman-Israeli war, the Romans literally kicked butt on Israel and renamed it Palestine. And those were the boundaries. That's what it was recreated in 1948. The reason the Romans renamed it Palestine is because they wanted to humiliate the Jews by naming it the land of the Jews' archenemy, which was the Philistines. The Philistines were not from that region. The Philistines came from the Aegean region, which is just east of Greece. It's called the Eurasian border. It's the border between Europe and Asia. They were not there. They came there in the 12th century BCE, 12th century BC, okay? So Israel didn't like those borders that were recreated for them. That's why in the 1967, the Six-Day War, Israel felt threatened, and I won't say unjustifiably so, by Egypt, Jordan, and Syria. And so they launched a preemptive attack on Egypt, Jordan, and Syria and took those lands, which we now call Gaza, West Bank, and Golan Heights. They took those to use them as buffer zones because they maintained the ancient border. The ancient border they maintained as Israel, and those were the occupied territories, Gaza, West Bank, and Golan Heights. Those were the buffers. They wanted buffer zones because they did not want Jordan and Egypt and Syria to be able to amass troops right on the border and step across the line, and there now it's a war. Okay, that'd be nice. It'd be nice if everybody, you know, the United States kind of has that. We have oceans, you know. We have buffer zones between Asia on the Pacific side, and we have buffer zone on the Atlantic, right? We don't have buffer zones between Canada and Mexico, and, of course, the one on the southern border, which is what gives a lot of people problems, right? Maybe they'd like to annex part of Mexico. Maybe that's what we should do. We should annex part of Mexico and make that an occupied territory. And then we could have a buffer zone between our southern border. I don't know about the Canadians. The Canadians, you know, they wouldn't go for that because 90% of Canadians live within 150 miles of the United States border. Okay. You want to talk some more about this? Get into the conversation. I know we have a short amount of time, but otherwise I'll just keep going on about the history. All right. 773-763-9278. 773-763-9278. We'll be right back. Back here on Kitchen Table Progressive for Sunday evening, May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, and a happy Cinco de Mayo to all of our Mexican friends. Let me get back to finish my thought on Gaza. So, in the 67 war, the Six-Day War, so to speak, was as it was called. Israel launched a preemptive attack on Egypt, Jordan, and Syria. I won't say that it was unprovoked. It was they were definitely rattling their swords. Egypt had asked the UN peacekeepers to leave, the Blue Helmets to leave the area, and so there was a fight brewing. Okay, but Israel did draw first blood, so to speak. They annexed these territories, Gaza and West Bank and Golan Heights. Then that's where the Palestinians were made to live. So my thought is that the strategy was this. Not only did they annex these lands, these areas, to give them a buffer zone, but they put the Palestinians there. They forced the Palestinians to live there, and that kind of made not only a buffer zone, but it was kind of a human shield. That's human shielding, because the Arab countries who surround them, if they're going to invade, they're going to have to go through, they're going to put a bunch of Palestinians in the middle of the invasion. That's human shielding. I'm just observing. I'm not saying, I'm not making a value judgment. I'm just observing. That's what it is. Is that not what's going on? Is that not true? Okay, so the Palestinians are not allowed to vote in Israeli politics. They can't say vote for Benjamin Netanyahu or his opponent. No. So if they're not allowed to participate in the country that holds their occupation, in other words, they're beholden to Israel because those lands belong supposedly to Israel now. The international community has never told them they have to give them back, even though Israel itself was created by international law, so to speak, the British Mandate in 1948, and under the original boundaries, of ancient Egypt, ancient Israel, were what the Greek creation was. Now they've taken these territories, they put the Palestinians there, they are not allowed to vote. Many of them do work in Israel, and a lot of Arabs work in Israel too, and a lot of Arabs like living in Israel. But the Palestinians are not allowed to vote in Israeli politics. So what choice do they have but to vote for who's running, right? If you put them in this position, they don't have much choice. And they're going to vote for some radicals. That's true. Hamas is a radical. I mean, they're not friendly people, but this isn't a friendly situation either. I mean, think about that. That's their choices. I personally think, and I'll get to the calls here in just a minute, just 1 second. I think that actually, not a two-state solution, but Israel would be safer with a one-state solution, an integrated Israel, integrated with not, let's not call them they're called the Palestinians, but they're not the Philistines. The Palestinians are the descendants of the ancient indigenous people of that region who are called the Canaanites. You can see all about them in Genesis chapter 10, verses 6, and then you can read verse 15 and verses 19 through 21. Genesis chapter 10. The Canaanites are who what we call the Palestinians. The Romans named them the Palestinians. They're not the Philistines. The Philistines aren't there anymore. Okay. Let me get to the call. So let's start with, Jim, you're up first. How you doing?
Yeah, pretty good, Paul. I had a suffrage for that Billy Bush tape again, and it's an entirety. It sounds like the confessions of a 70-year-old sexual predator who's run amok all of his life. He has no control over impulse. He has no control at all over impulse. That tape is so disturbing. And to think of this guy gets three judges on a Supreme Court and is going to go through the histrionics of women. He's going to decide which women will go to prison. This is a man who's, it sounds like he's molested everybody he's ever come in contact with. And the irony is to have him as the arbitrator of women's health. I mean, that is, on itself is the irony of all time. That strikes me. And if I could just say something about Palestine. First of all, the Anglo-Saxons have their fingerprints all over Palestine. They used to hang the Palestinians regularly. They didn't go by their rules. They were hung. Now, you got an intractable problem there now. But I remember clergy, I'd have lunch with clergy that had gone to Jerusalem, and they'd all say the same thing. Boy, the Palestinians are treated like second-class citizens. They're taking off buses. They're just treated like savages. And that was the 70s, Paul. That was the 1970s. Yeah. So this two-state solution, the closest we got was, who was assassinated? It was the right-wing... Rabin was assassinated, but Rabin was looking for a two-state solution. And he was assassinated by a right-wing...
By a right-winger, yeah.
Netanyahu-type person. And that blew everything up for another 20 years. Yep. So, I mean, it's an intractable problem that we can't get our hands around because it begs for a two-state solution. And think of this now. They're facing famine. And the Irish deputy minister said he knows what it was to be colonized. They were colonized by the Anglo-Saxons, and they had genocide from 1840 to about 1850, where a million Irish people died of famine while they were exporting beef and lamb and everything to the Anglo-Saxon rest of their country. So he knows that. And McCain's wife, she's got something to do with the hunger thing. She said, definitely famine. This is famine striking there. So I can see where these kids in these colleges are, their eyeballs with it. You know what I mean? They don't want to see people dying of famine for no reason. 35 million people have been killed there. I mean, how many more people do they want to kill? Now they want to go in for a ground invasion.
Right.
I mean, ground invasion of what? It's going to take 40 years to rebuild anything that was there to begin with.
Yeah, Gaza is destroyed. Yeah, Gaza is destroyed.
It's destroyed. What about the Doctors Without Borders that are there? How about Andre, the humanitarian from Spain, who his seven workers were killed And he swears that they knew about it. He said, I built a huge pier going into the place to deliver the food. They knew goddamn well that those were people there to save lives. So I can see these students. I can see they're fed up with it. And I'll be honest with you.
Well, we're all fed up with it. We're all fed up with it, Jim. But here's the thing, is that this is, I mean, can President Biden do anything about it? And I don't, I mean, is this going to, for instance, the concern has been, well, are the students going to, you know, and especially in Michigan, are the Palestinians, are they going to not vote for Biden? And I don't think
he can't do anything about it. But honest to goodness, you could, even if you were going to lose the election, you'd have to go on the side of Palestinian. You'd have to, because you want to save lives. Bernie Sanders said it correctly. He said, just cut off the spigot of the money until they capitulate. He said it in no uncertain terms, and that's about the size of it. But our problem, of course, is we supported Egypt for billions and billions of dollars for years. We have such a strategic spider web in that region that it's almost impossible to deal with it. But our only hope is to get a two-state solution. Talk. Who's running Israel now? Netanyahu. You got to talk them down somehow.
Well, here's the thing, is that Israel's never going to accept a one-state solution. I think a one-state solution would make them safer, because if it was an integrated state, you're not likely to have the Arab neighbors attacking where the Palestinians are integrated throughout. It's kind of like, but Israel will never accept that. Israel doesn't want a two-state solution, because what happens then is then you have the Palestinians, again, your enemies are right on your border, and so they're back to where they started in 67. So, but they will cite the fact that originally that the Palestinians didn't want a two-state solution, and I can see why, because the Palestinians, when you think about it, in 1948, why did we recreate Israel? Because of Hitler? I mean, that's the main reason. We recreated Israel under biblical terms because a monster like Hitler tried to kill them all. I mean, let's just say it out loud. Let's say the truth out loud.
That's exactly right. Exactly right. He started, in fact, when his first started out, he'd pay your passage to Israel. You know what I mean? Because he wanted, that was the whole idea for Hitler. You get rid of the Jews by just sending them to Palestine. Send them in that area. Yeah, absolutely.
And there would be, let's say this, there would be, if there was no Hitler, I'm going to venture this, there'd be no Israel today. If there'd never been a Hitler, there'd be no Israel. And frankly, the Zionist movement that took place where a lot of Jews came back from Russia and were moving to Palestine, they were getting along fine with the Palestinians. And by the way, being from the Detroit area, I grew up in the community right next to Dearborn, Michigan. I grew up in Garden City, Westland. And there are lots of Arabs and Palestinians living in Dearborn, but in East Dearborn, it's heavily Jewish. They get along fine, too. It's like,
yeah, I know it, but this has gone too far.
When people are made second class citizens, you're right. It's just going to lead to the kind of, as you say, intractable situation that we have.
Well, Ireland had a similar situation for hundreds and hundreds of years. They were colonized by the Anglo-Saxons. Their language was taken away. They had to speak English. Their religion was taken away after Henry VIII turned into a Protestant. Mm-hmm. So they were living under extreme conditions for years. It took them forever to get their country back. They had to kill a lot of Anglo-Saxons from 1917 to 1921, Paul. Please believe me, to get that flag in Ireland. That's all I have to say. But as far as Trump putting these judges on the court, a serial sexual predator, if you can't see that, if the voters can't see that, they're blind. Anyway, Paul, thanks for taking my call. Thank you, Paul.
You bet. Yeah. Thanks, Jim. Thank you. Yeah, Donald Trump is a monster. He's a monster. And I tell you what, his effect, the interest of taking women's reproductive rights away is going to be probably the biggest biggest interest in the upcoming election. And so let's talk to Kerry, and who wants to talk about the 2024 election and see what's on Kerry's mind.
Yeah, you know, just extrapolating from your discussions on this with not just the 24 election, but the abortion issue, not issue interest, sorry. That's a very good distinction you make. Suppose we do turn out in November and, you know, we take the House again and we get the Senate, we build on our majorities and we have the White House, and then we go and we add four more Supreme Court justices and we reverse all this. It's not just Roe v. Wade. It's, you know, all the regulatory issues that the Supreme Court has taken up, the whole conservative agenda, you know, outlined in the Lewis Powell memo way back. Suppose we swing the pendulum, and then what? What can we? What happens after that? Do we get the pendulum swinging again, the dialectic, or can we like build on that? What's your crystal ball on this?
Well, okay, let's go back to something that Jim said. He says, okay, so you know, say Biden loses the election, you know, we got to stand up for what's right. Okay, but look at it this way. In 1980, Jimmy Carter has said this. President Carter said, "Yeah, I could have gone to war with Iran, and I would have won the election. I know I would have won the election because the country was so angry and upset about the hostages." He said, "But many innocent people, both Americans and Iranians, would have been killed, and I wasn't going to do that." And so look what happened. So he said, I knew I was going to lose the election because of that. And then what did we get? We got the beginning of the collapse of the middle class. Ronald Reagan, Mr. Well, I don't know. I'm a very moral man. I just want to cut all your wages. Okay, so there's a bit of, you know, we have to kind of evaluate the where we're going. If we hadn't, Democrats, I want to refer to what Van Jones once said, you know, Barack Obama. This is a friend, Van Jones. He said, when Republicans lose an election, they just want to kill. They want to murder Democrats. But when Democrats want to lose an election, we want to kill ourselves. And so we keep letting this happen. If Democrats would have really turned, they were just sort of ho-hum on Al Gore. And that was another just terrible, and in a census year. So we got George W. Bush by the just like 537 votes, which was, by the way, a stolen election by the Supreme Court. And he added more of these right wingers, Samuel Alito, John Roberts. And that was the beginning of how this awful court that has just the court is an abomination. So we have to get going in the right direction. We keep stalling. We kind of are like the football team that we just can't put, you know, enough of a drive together to score. I mean, if we could score is the way the Republicans are scoring with a worse team and a minority, if we had more Stephen Breyers on the court, of course he's retired now, instead of the three, you know, we have Amy Coney Barrett and Kavanaugh and Gorsuch. If we had three more Stephen Breyers on the court, well, we wouldn't be having the gerrymandering that we have now. The Republican Party shouldn't be winning anything. They're in such a minority, but the gerrymandering is what's keeping them going. And the court is allowing them, you see what I mean, to do this, to get away with stuff that most of us don't want. I mean, what do you think of that?
Well, have you ever read the Fourth Turning is Here or the Fourth Turning?
I don't. Who
it's
wrote
a very interesting theory. I forget the name of the authors, but the idea is that you have a generation every 20, 25 years, give or take.
Yeah, right.
And when you have the four generations. You have the seculum, which is 100 years, yeah, which is considered a lifetime. Right. That's a term to use. And if you have a period, you have an activist generation, which the boomers were, and then you have two non-activist generations, and then you get an activist generation, and then you get severe change. Now, this has come under a lot of criticism, but it's kind of interesting,
yeah,
and you know, it kind of addresses what you were saying.
But you really didn't answer my question. And it's a tough question. I mean, who knows? Like I said, crystal ball. I mean, what? Let's say we do win, and, you know, according to this fourth turning theory, we're going to have big-time chaos.
Well, there could be.
A good time comes out of it, you know, kind of like the 1960s.
Yeah, well, it could be. But it all turns up. Remember, if you listen to the program regularly, we had Professor Marjorie Hersey from Indiana University. She said that it all comes down to who turns out. Because I asked her the question. Why, you know, it depends. I said, when I asked her, because analogy was
more specific. We have to turn out, Paul. Democrats have to turn out. We turned out the last three elections. And look what happened.
We win.
We turn out.
And we win. Yeah, and we're just barely recovering. We're just barely recovering to, you know, getting back to the line of scrimmage, so to speak, and we can't let up. And, you know, we every time, and Democrats fail to turn out in the worst times. They failed to turn out in 2000 for Gore, and then they failed. The Tea Party thing was in 2010. You know, finally we turned out in 2020, in 2020, and beat Trump, and also... Yeah, well, it's waking up to your interests. And by the way, I just want to explain. You know, I'm trained in mediation, and that's one of the things you talk about with people is what are your issues with the other party? And that's the things you're angry about. You know, that's what brings it to conflict, because conflict is emotionally based, and it's always based on subjective things. We don't argue about the objective. The interests are, well, what's in it for you? What do you really need from this? And people can't get to the interest when they're arguing about the issues, the emotional issues. So
we can't use facts and reason with an authoritarian personality either. That's another
right.
theory.
They do not
respond to facts and reason. So you got to find a different way. And
Republicans are
from the Karen Center.
Okay, sorry. Say that again.
Dr. Karen Stenner would be, you know, the authoritarian dynamic is also very good. And she says that you have to find a way, because the thing with authoritarian personalities, who are a third of all populations, they can't handle complexity or diversity.
You have to
find a way to meet the need for oneness and sameness.
Well, and what the Republicans do is they always put up issues. You know, they want to get people upset with issues because that's what people get upset by. And if you can frame it in terms of the issue being something that you're afraid of losing, because the libertine liberals, the anything goes liberals, are threatening your children are going to turn gay or turn trans or something because of these liberal messages. I've always said to these people,
we're brown people.
Yeah,
you know, right. We're not part of the in group.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the reason you don't have a job isn't because you're lazy and you don't want to develop yourself. It's because some black person got it and you didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, we've heard this graph. In other words, the black people can outcompete you. That's what I would really say is, oh, so a black person got the job. The employer decided that a black person could outcompete you. They're too lazy and you're not a very good candidate for the job. So they hired this black guy. That's what we really should be saying. White people are really threatened by this kind of stuff. And the Republicans keep playing the issues. But you know what? The Republicans are kind of failing on the issues because they want to make immigration an issue. But look what they did. They haven't put that one across the line. They tried to make Ukraine and Gaza an issue, but they went and passed the funding bill. So they caved on that. They're out of issues. But the interest that is overwhelmingly, as you point out, overwhelmingly going to be in effect is the women's reproductive health, because women are losing their rights, and they are losing. I mean, they've had a constitutional right taken away from them. And that is causing them to have to deal with not only with health, but with finances and every which way of life. So the Gaza thing, yes, the protests are legitimate, but in terms of the question of will it affect the election, I don't think so, because I don't think there's any Palestinians in Dearborn, Michigan, who are going to vote for Trump instead of Biden, or are going to not vote. If they were going to vote to begin with, they're going to vote, and they're going to vote for Biden. So it's, you know, that's...
Well, remember, Paul, we can handle complexity and diversity. It's the authoritarian personalities who cannot.
That's right.
So we can handle, you know, who said I don't belong to any organized party? I belong to the Democratic Party.
Or I think it was Roy Rogers. Roy Rogers. So, yeah, well, yeah, you know, another thing Robert Frost said that says a liberal is a man who can't take his own side in an argument. It's like maybe I'm wrong about that. It kind of reminds me of like Mr. Haney on Green Acres. Well, you think about that. I don't know. Mr. Douglas, I'm not sure about that. Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. I think there's a lot to it. It's a complex issue, but like, as you say, the people who are fair-minded are more nuanced. They can handle complex issues, whereas the people who just want to rabble-rouse issues, they can't handle the authoritarians, and they're authoritarians. They just want it their way because, and that's it. It's not for any good or any policy issues that it's for them.
It started after World War II at the Frankfurt School, Adorno, and he did, you know, heavy-duty studies on why did the German people follow Hitler. And they came up with this theory, I think it was Erich Fromm who coined the term authoritarian. So there's a lot to it. You might look into that. It's interesting. I don't think it explains everything. But
A lot of denial in that situation. My mother's family, my grandmother and great-grandmother came from Germany in 1925 because my great-grandfather knew that Hitler was going to be rising. He was going to be a troublemaker, and they got out early. Actually, grandma and great-grandma came early in 25, and actually grandpa came later. He came in 1927. So, but they were getting out. I don't know why I don't know the story of why he came later. Usually, you know, the husband gets a job, comes first and gets a job, but he was a factory worker, but they knew it. And so the people who, not everybody can leave the country, and the Bosch were restricting him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The few that didn't leave are gone. My family, but they left before. So they knew. My great grandfather put my great grandmother on a boat.
Yeah, right.
And
yep, same thing. I found somebody else found my grandma and my great grandma's registry on the Ellis Island. Found them on the Ellis Island registry. So I know it. I didn't know how to do that, but she found it. She said, yeah.
She lived 101, so I knew her and I got all the stories. It was kind of interesting.
Yeah. Right now, I'm dealing with some of my great grandma's stuff because maybe, as you know, my mom passed away, and now I'm having to sort out all of her house and run across some old stuff. So, anyway.
Anyway. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Paul.
You bet. Okay. Thanks a lot. Okay. Let's go to take our last break, and we'll be right back. Alrighty, finishing up here last a few minutes on Kitchen Table Progressive here this Sunday evening. So, you know, another thing about the situation in Gaza is that we're not accustomed to, and how horrific, you know, we call Hamas a terrorist organization. Okay, so from our point of view, yeah, okay, they are. There's something that we need to understand, at least that I've come to understand. I have a friend who's from Afghanistan. She's been an American citizen since 1983. Her father was killed in the Russian invasion. He worked for the Afghan government. He worked in the presidential palace, they call it there, which was bombed by the Russians in 79, I think, when the Russians invaded Afghanistan. And, of course, they lost. Nobody who invades Afghanistan ever wins. I mean, you know, Genghis Khan, he avoided Afghanistan. He went around Afghanistan. Yeah, he said, I don't want no part of Afghanistan. He went around, he went north of it when he came over from Mongolia he went through Turkey. And actually, he conscripted these guys that were called berserks. That's berserks, these fierce warriors that he found in eastern Turkey. That's what the term go berserk comes from. Berserk. These berserks were very fierce warriors, and he conscripted the berserks into his armies and conquest. But what my friend said is that I asked her, what is this terrorism all about? And she said, okay, you have to understand one thing. There's two kinds of people in the Middle East. There's the very, very rich and the very, very poor. Most people are very, very poor. And the rich people in the Middle East, they don't want to fund standing armies in these nation states. So the way they wage their wars against each other, the rich people, that is with terrorism. I mean, you've heard that, you know, Hamas has offices in Qatar, right? Probably the top of some office building. They are funded by rich people in the Middle East. These are how they rich people in the Middle East deal with grievances between each other. This is terrorism. They conscript young men because to do violence, and they tell them that you're doing this for God, and that's not all that different from, you know, we have American Christian people who will do violence for God, you know, bombing abortion clinics or killing a doctor in church, as that one doctor who did terminated pregnancies, did abortions, was shot in church. Yeah, a guy I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but so they tell these young men that, and then we're going to give your family a lot of money. And so these young men who have no employment, most of them have no skills or education, they think that's a pretty good deal. I'm better off dead, and then my family will be taken care of. Because it's more honorable. That's the thing. It's dishonorable not to be able to take care of your family in the Islamic world. So if I can do something, and this is like joining the army to them. But they don't have armies, or they have very small armies. And their armies are really not very effective. I mean, Saudi Arabia has the biggest army of the Middle Eastern countries. Saudi Arabia are in the top four of military expenditures. The top is the United States. It spends more money than any, you know, the next 8 or 10 countries combined, at almost $1 trillion now, nearly $900 billion in the last budget. We don't have a budget. That's right. The last expenditure. And then China is about an eighth. Spends about probably up to about $150 billion. China doesn't spend anywhere near as much as we do. We have 12 aircraft carriers. China has 2. Russia has 1. Russia spends about $84 billion, or maybe $90 billion by now. The last time I looked, it was $84. And actually, they were 4th. Saudi Arabia was actually higher in expenditures than that. But the other countries don't spend anything. So it is legitimate to say that, yeah, we are funding Israel's standing army. We are giving them weapons or selling them weapons. We also sold weapons to Saudi Arabia. Remember the early warning aircraft, the AWACS, back in the 70s? We sold that to them. Yeah, we were big supporters of Saudi Arabia too. We have had, and why it's like terrorism to us is, this is what my friend said, is because the United States gets caught in the middle. Our interests get caught in the middle of terrorist acts. We think it's directed at us. But terrorism is this kind of, random violence. And so we get caught in the middle of it. Our interests, so to speak, get caught in the middle of it. And then we think, oh, we were attacked. Well, we were just caught in the crossfire. That's really what it was. It's not that the terrorism was directed at the United States. That was her. That's what she said. It's a very complex issue, and, you know, maybe we'll talk about it again. I didn't want to make any value judgments on either Israel or Palestine. I hope I didn't. But I made observations about what I see going. But it's a problem. And as Jim said, it's an intractable problem. And I don't see it's going to be solved anytime soon. Certainly not by the time the election comes around. So Anyway, that be what it may. Okay. Well, thanks again for joining me here on Kitchen Table Progressive. Your calls are always welcome, and I certainly appreciate those of you who did call. Join me again next Sunday night at 6 p.m., immediately following the family meeting, right here on AM 820 WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk, Heartland Signal, streaming at heartlandsignal.com, where facts matter. See you next time.